Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah. Hey. 610, go ahead, dance. You know you want to. I know it's early, but there you are. Trying to pick out just the right thing to wear today. Shake it a little bit. Those of you in the car not wearing your complete outfit, I can't help you. Yeah, there's a lot of music from the 70s that doesn't hold up. That's not one of them. Earth, Wind, and Fire, Anytime. Nice job, Jake. Way to start the program. It's Steve Cochran at 610. We almost had that moment, and, you know, Jake's only 31, so it could have been awkward for him. Slightly awkward for Sandberg. But there is a point where, because you remember this, where there'd be a song that would come on, and all of a sudden your parents would start dancing.
Oh, yeah.
And Dave and I were about to go. Dave and I were about to go. We were about to shake it a little bit and make all the kids in the room, including you, Darlis, uncomfortable.
You guys can shake it any time.
Yeah.
Let's see it.
How about you respect us for our brains for once?
Huh? Sorry.
Okay.
Your eyes are up there.
It's 6:11. We got a lot to do today, as always. One of the big news stories you're going to hear about today is Benghazi. What? Again? Yes, again. And for those of you who think I am particularly a Trump basher, oh, wait till you hear what I have to say about Hillary. So that's coming up here in a little while. In addition to that, Steve Dale's going to bring a dog in later. And a lot of people say, well, the only reason you put Steve Dale on is because he brings a dog in. Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And he'll be in the 9 o'clock hour. But Micah Halpern is one of my favorite guests. I don't really want to be stuck in an elevator with Micah Halpern because he knows too much about too many bad guys. And you expect at some point the elevator's going to stop on a floor, the doors will open, and there'll be guys there that are going to harm you because of what Micah says about thugs. But he literally wrote a book called Thugs about the worst people in the world. And Micah Halpern knows about all the bad guys everywhere. And he can shed a little light on what's happening in Iraq. Because while we're focused on Brexit and we're focused on Trump and Clinton, on the other side of the world, there are people losing their lives every single day in fighting these unimaginable bad guys from ISIS. And this week, the town of Fallujah was taken back. Fallujah is, if you've had no connection to the military, Fallujah is a city name you may remember. It's one of the bloodiest fights in the original Iraq war of the early 2000s. So that's a good thing. Now, Mosul is where this giant dam is. And this dam, this earthen dam that has been cited by structural engineers all over the globe is a major, major a point of concern. They literally have to deal with the erosion of the dam at the base every single day. And if at any point these ISIS lunatics decide to blow this dam up, the floodwaters would be epic. The entire city of Mosul would be underwater. And however many miles it is downriver, downstream to Baghdad, there would be epic flooding in Baghdad as well. So it's a major problem of, pardon the analogy, but biblical proportions. I hate to use the word biblical, considering the Satanists that are actually involved in this. But that's what the concern is. If you can get Mosul, maybe you break the back of ISIS in Iraq. So a long time ago, a long time in current terms, Micah Halpern, at least a year ago, might have been 2 years ago, was on the show talking about the fact that the reason ISIS was able to take so much territory so fast in Iraq, and I'll bring this up to him again, was because of fast-spreading rumors of beheadings and things of that nature. And even though the Iraqi soldiers were trained and they had better weaponry, there was this this almost horror movie aspect to ISIS, and they literally dropped their weapons and ran.
It was fear.
Yeah. So we'll talk to Mike Halpern about that, see what the latest is in regards to that. And Kid of the Week today as well, Nick, in just a few minutes. So that's the lay of the land as we get things started. Everybody okay? Everybody strapped in for the show?
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Ready. Let's go live to Dave's head and see how he's recovering. Dave, recovering from some surgery last week. How are you feeling?
Better every day.
All right. This is Steve Cochran again reporting live from Dave's head. And again, your advice to people is, even though you did nothing wrong as far as I'm concerned, is make sure you use the sunblock every time you go outside.
Always wear a hat because I have a full head of hair.
Yeah.
But where I had skin cancer was on the top of my head, under my hair.
Yeah. And that wasn't a shot, was it, that whole full head of hair thing?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
How did you find it, Dave, with your full head of hair?
Well, I would go to get a haircut, and the lady who cuts my hair would hit it with a comb, and it would bleed for a couple days. So I went to the dermatologist, which I do regularly, as Dr. Most recommends.
Uh-huh. Every year.
He checked it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple times a year.
And the dermatologist said, yeah, you got an issue here. We got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, hairdressers a lot of times are the ones that discover these things.
A lot of people don't know this. Hairdressers save more lives in America than anyone.
That's right.
Yeah.
More?
They make us look good every day.
That's right, though. And cosmetologists, you know, when you go for facials or, you know, eyebrow waxing.
And they say, ooh, what's that?
Suddenly it sounds like Latin.
I know,
once
sorry.
You got into the faces. Facials? Facials?
Facials, eyebrow waxing.
Eyebrow waxing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Which neither of you guys need, of course, because you have perfect eyebrows.
Yeah.
Near perfect.
Well, I still wax. You know, I wax all the time.
We don't want to know that. Okay.
And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight.
Fall back.
How bad does a movie have to have the United States of America's finest and the rest of the world fighting off aliens in an attack, celebrating our Independence Day, leading into the 4th of July weekend, and nobody wants to see it? How bad, Nick DiGilio, is this movie?
I believe the word is crap.
Rated C for crap. So and so bad, by the way, that Jamie Foxx was smart enough not to do the sequel.
Well, it was Will Smith.
That too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know what people say all the time? All of us as black entertainers, we all look alike, and I'm here to tell you it's not true.
Hey, by the way, I just wanted to congratulate you, Steve. I'm thrilled that you're going to be doing the show for another 4 years.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, my
means a lot. You're the best.
That's very nice of you and unnecessary. My contract renewal was announced yesterday. I just did it as a publicity stunt. I'm out Friday.
Okay. But you're off tomorrow.
No, I'll be here. I will absolutely be here. All right, so let's go back to Independence Day, not starring Will Smith. This is a sequel. Is it different than the first one?
No. It's not really. There's just more crap. It made $41 million over the weekend, which is less than what the original made 20 years ago without inflation.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah.
So how about that?
That is a bomb. But on top, the number one movie in the country for the second week in a row is Finding Dory, which made almost $73 million, and it's well on its way. In the next few weeks, it's well on its way to probably breaking the record and being the most profitable animated film ever made.
And you liked it. You didn't love it. Am I remembering that right?
I liked it. Yes, I liked it. I didn't like it as much as the first one. I enjoyed the shark movie that came out this past week, The Shallows, with Blake Lively versus a shark. I enjoyed that.
You enjoyed the movie, or you enjoyed Blake Lively in a bikini?
Well, let's not get crazy, but yes. And I also really love The Neon Demon, and I've caught a lot of flack for liking that movie. A movie that
Horror movie set in the fashion industry.
It is, yeah. And it's absolutely, completely, certifiably insane, and I loved it.
Some crazy ending too that I'm seeing a lot of buzz about.
The last half hour of this movie, it's got some stuff in it that I've never seen before. So
oh, come on!
Right there.
You've seen everything twice.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm going back to see this one again.
Wow.
So, but the one I wanted to mention quickly, because it's kind of getting lost in the shuffle because it didn't get a theatrical release, is this film that debuted on Netflix over the weekend, and I watched it on Sunday, and it's called The Fundamentals of Caring. And it stars Paul Rudd, Selena Gomez, this kid Craig Roberts.
And Bobby Cannavale.
And Bobby Cannavale, who's got, yeah, he's got a great role in it, a small role in it. But I just wanted to mention that it's written by, the screenplay and direction was by Rob Burnett. Rob Burnett, of course, you know the name.
Yeah, Letterman's guy.
Letterman's guy. Letterman, he produced Letterman's show for years. He wrote and directed a bunch of episodes of that terrific show with Tom Cavanaugh called Ed. And this is a really wonderful movie, and I hope a lot of people get a chance to see it. If you got Netflix, you should check it out. Paul Rudd plays this depressed guy going through a divorce, who had a tragedy in his life, trying to get something going in his life. So he takes a six-week course to become a caregiver so that he could help, you know, people who need help, people who are sick in wheelchairs, and become a caregiver. And the first out of the gate, the first client that he gets is this 18-year-old kid who's got muscular dystrophy. He's in a wheelchair, and he becomes his first client. And the kid likes to play pranks. The kid likes to act like a jerk. And suddenly this great relationship starts between these two. And it's different than any kind of relationship that you would imagine this kind of movie having. Like when you hear, oh, caregiver, person with muscular dystrophy, teenager with muscular dystrophy, it's going to go through all of the cliches that you would find in these kinds of films. But this movie avoids them. And the relationship between the two of these guys is some of the best chemistry and acting I've seen on screen all year. And the dialogue is refreshingly vulgar and really, really honest. And it doesn't, you know, it has cliches in it, but it avoids them for the most part all the way through.
Did it remind you of anything? It's not like a Rain Man sort of feel?
No, not really. And it becomes, like Rain Man, it eventually becomes a road movie, like a lot of these movies do. And he takes this kid on this trip because he's never left the house. He hates leaving the house. He watches television all the time, and he's got a map where he's got all these weird roadside attractions that he really likes seeing on TV. So Paul Rudd decides he's going to take him on the road and take him to all these places, like to see the biggest bovine in the country and to check out the world's deepest pit. And on the road, they meet Selena Gomez, who plays a runaway. And that becomes kind of a love interest for the kid in the wheelchair. And then they meet a pregnant girl who is also on the run. And they all kind of get together as this hodgepodge group of people and do this road trip. And then, you know, all of their problems kind of come together and they try to be resolved by the end of the film.
Best thing you've ever seen Paul Rudd do?
Well, I mean,
as an actor, I mean?
Well, I mean, Paul Rudd's great in everything. I personally think Paul Rudd is amazing and he can kind of do anything. And this is kind of a break from a lot of the silly comedies and the action movies that he's been doing lately. And it's back to the kind of cool stuff that he used to do when he first started in the business. Because, I mean, you know, one of the first movies he ever did was a Neil LaBute film called The Shape of Things, which is a very dark, it's a dark comedy, but really, really dark and heavy stuff. And this kind of harkens back to that. It's funny. It's got some really great laughs in it. It's really moving. And like I said, refreshingly, it stays away from those cliches that you would expect from a movie about a guy taking care of a kid in a wheelchair. It really stays away from that stuff, and it becomes a really wonderful road movie about really flawed characters who got a lot of work to do on themselves and with other people.
Fundamentals of Caring on Netflix now?
I highly recommend it. Yeah, it debuted over the weekend, and if you've got Netflix at home, check out Fundamentals of Caring. It's based on a best-selling book, which I have not read, and from what I understand, it's pretty faithful to the book, and people who like the book will probably like this movie. But it's terrific, and Craig Roberts and Paul Rudd have an amazing chemistry, and it's a really terrific movie, and I hope people who have Netflix take a chance on it.
Nick, speaking of Netflix, do you watch Orange is the New Black? Have you seen the new season yet?
I have not seen the new season. I am about a season behind.
Okay, I just wonder what buzz was, if it was as good as
couple. The buzz is great. Really high. I've read stuff about it, and that's a terrific show.
It is.
The girls actually are out of prison now. They're living in the Golden Girls place in Miami.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a new season. I don't want to ruin it for you.
They skipped ahead.
Also, I would like to speak on Netflix, and I want to recommend this to you, Steve, in particular. Are you familiar with the stand-up comedian Maria Bamford?
Sure.
She is so great. She's got this insane autobiographical surrealistic show that I binge watched in a day and a half on Netflix called Lady Dynamite.
Yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah.
It's as original and as crazy and as funny a show that you'll ever see. And I love Maria Bamford.
She's very funny. She's very, very weird and very funny.
Yep, absolutely, man. And this show, Lady Dynamite, is very, very weird and very funny. And if Maria Bamford fans out there want to see something great, that's also on Netflix. And I ripped through it in a day and a half. It's great.
And your buddy Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day? Needlenose Ned?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen how good he is on Silicon Valley?
Oh, my God, Steve.
Tremendous.
Yeah, tremendous. We're I think he's going to be on my show next week. Yeah. And we're gonna talk about that. He was just, it's one of the craziest parts he's ever had, too.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
Yes, hey,
this doesn't ruin it for you, but Silicon Valley is Mike Judge, the Beavis and Butthead King of the Hill guy, who was a code writer. And this is all about, basically, it's what Big Bang Theory could have been without
exactly.
the laugh track and all the sex. And it's all of these guys in Silicon Valley who have this amazing discovery and the startup they're trying to get up. But the guy that the Ned Ryerson character, what's his name? Why am I forgetting his name?
It's Stephen Tobolowsky.
Stephen Tobolowsky is one of the funniest character actors ever.
Yep.
He's a genius in startups, but his obsession is a box.
Yep.
it's just, and by the way, it's just a box.
Yep.
It's a box.
Yep.
All right, man.
I do want to mention quickly, you mentioned Mike Judge. I do want to mention that he's also the guy responsible for Idiocracy, which is now a documentary.
Oh, good. Well, there you go. Spend the weekend with Netflix. Oh, wait, it's nice outside. Wait till it rains and spend the day with Netflix.
There you go.
All right, man. That's Nick DiGilio, and Nick will be back on Thursday. The Fundamentals of Caring is the Rob Burnett movie he mentioned, which he highly recommends with Paul Rudd. Back with a big story next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
You know, a kid who goes above and beyond for his family or her family or community, nominate them for Kid of the Week. Go to WGNradio.com/contest to get an entry in for a kid between 5 and 18. They could be Kid of the Week. We announce the winner every Tuesday, and then in December, all the Kid of the Week nominees are thrown in a hat. What kind of hat do you use, Dave?
It'll be probably just one of my golf hats.
Okay.
Yeah, if that's okay.
And then you and Mary pull all the entries out of the hat. You go over them. It's a careful vetting process.
It's very careful process.
It's
painstaking, but it's important.
Right. And the 2016 Kid of the Year will be awarded a $5,000 prize, courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch. See all the inventory at rayandraymonddeals.com. Go to WGNradio.com/contest to submit your entry. You're going to meet this week's Kid of the Week and a special mystery guest with her in just a second as well.
And they're adorable.
And tough.
Right.
Well, that's exactly right.
Adora tough, toughable.
They're fierce.
It has something to do with hockey. I'll tell you that much. Speaking of hockey, who's going to be the first Blackhawk to fight Andrew Shaw?
Well, that's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you know it's going to happen.
Are they going to line up?
You know it's going to happen.
None of them, because none of them fight.
I think in this case.
He was our guy.
Yeah, and Bickle, and he's gone too. Yeah, good call.
So the Blackhawks are wimps? Is that what you're saying, Samber? Samber, is that what you're saying? The Blackhawks are wimps?
Oh.
She's saying yes.
Oh, no.
Now, there was a period last year, if you remember, where Jonathan Toews got in a lot of fights.
Toews spent a lot of time in the corners. But who's the big kid? The big kid who did nothing but take penalty minutes.
Brandon Bolig's been gone for a couple of years.
No, not Brandon Bolig. No, he's young. I don't know. I'll look
not
at the
Panarin.
Roster. I'll look at the roster. I'll get an answer while Mary does this traffic update on 720 WGN. Brandon Mashinder. Mash. Big kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the mom trip. He has a very attractive mom, which I know is interesting to some of the older members of the press crew. Now Brandon's going to come over here and try to punch me.
Yeah.
Brandon Mashinder was the guy I was thinking of.
Okay.
So he should be popular on your team. He's a good-looking dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They all are.
6:48, meet the Kid of the Week in a second. Has something to do with hockey. Okay? Anyone?
Hockey players?
By the time this segment's over, she's going to have a deal with the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. All right, we'll take a break and come back on 720 WGN. Kid of the Week sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. Fairly simple premise for Kid of the Week this week. It's a young lady, a girl who plays hockey. And you're going, well, what's the big deal? The big deal is the Blackhawks have created this explosion of youth hockey. And I think it's a cool story that we have not one, but two future hockey superstars in studio this morning, starting with Allie Zack. Good morning, Allie.
Good morning.
How old are you?
I'm 11 years old.
How long have you been playing hockey?
Like 3 to 4 years.
3 to 4 years.
8 years.
Mom's in the background.
All right, first off, stop skipping math class for hockey practice, okay? And want to introduce who else is in the studio with us?
My sister, Madison Zach.
Hi.
Hi, Madison. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. Now, Madison, we talked off the air a second ago. You started playing at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Allie, you started playing at 3.
Yes.
All right. And neither one of you have a dad currently playing in the NHL?
No.
No.
Okay. So what got you interested in hockey? It had to be the Blackhawks.
That and my older cousin, he played. And so my mom and dad took me to watch my older cousin play. And so then I started wanting to play after him.
And then, Allie, you saw Big Sis and you wanted to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what positions do you guys play?
We both play defense.
Oh. So there's no time where mom has to watch you two punching each other. Except at your house. Except at home, fighting over stuff at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you love it enough to stay with it?
Oh, yeah. I love it a lot. We love it a lot.
We do.
This is going to be so great. Your parents won't have to pay for college. This is tremendous. I don't want to get ahead of you here, Mom, but come on. What's your favorite part, Allie, about playing hockey?
I just love the game of it. It's fast movement and, like, you get your feet moving and...
It's hand-eye coordination. You got to get that puck on a stick. It's all that, right?
Yeah.
And?
I love it because of the family of it that you get from it. I have 19 girls on my team, and we're all there for each other and with each other.
Yeah. It's the solidarity of it. And you guys, too, you're young, but you're in great shape, too. We were talking off the air about you do your workout, you eat healthy. Talk a little bit about your routines that you go through, too.
I know I work out 3 days a week during the season.
I work out 2 or 3. Depends on the week.
What time do you get up?
In summer days, probably around 8-ish, but on school days, 6.
All right, you don't know this, Andrea, but the girls get up at 6 on school days, 8 otherwise, and they begin with a 4-hour run with full hockey gear. And then they are allowed 2 Cheerios each.
Oh, right. Yes.
And then they come back. They have a full hockey practice. And then they sleep for 10 minutes. They're woken up by several alarms near their heads, and they're forced to go out and skate for hours. But that's why you love it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite player on the Blackhawks, Ellie?
Mine's Hossa, because he always tries 110% no matter what.
Amen.
Yeah. And...
How about a hand for Haas? How about a hand for Haas? And?
I like Duncan Keith. He's my favorite.
Because he never stops skating. He's playing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking the big minutes on defense, aren't you?
Sometimes.
Yeah. What's the name of your team, Allie?
Mine is the Ice Dogs in Vernon Hills.
And?
Glacier.
I play at the Chicago Mission.
Okay. And do you guys have a summer league? So
no.
You don't start playing again until this fall.
Yeah.
I think it's great, Dave. You take a sport like hockey, and not only has youth hockey exploded for young boys, for girls as well.
No question. And we've seen it in the college ranks now. So, I mean, it's not just the NHL, not just the professional ranks, but college. I mean, they've had a powerhouse at the University of Wisconsin for a long time. So I could see Allie maybe... suiting up there.
That'd be great. Well, we got college paid for them, you know, so we've already figured that part out.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I'd love to see you guys play together, like the Sedins. I just think that's kind of, do you have maybe a desire to do that too, play on the same team?
How about that?
I
the Zach sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be tremendous.
That'd be cool. I mean, you'd like that, right?
Yeah.
I would like it.
Yeah, that'd be tremendous. Any of these teams you guys have played on co-ed, or are they all girl teams?
The Ice Dogs. The Ice Dogs is a boys team, and like there's more girls than
hold on, we didn't get this part of the information. You're playing on a boys team?
Yeah.
Nice job.
Yeah.
Any of the boys giving you a hard time?
No,
because they know who they're messing with. They're messing with Allie Zach. Right? That's right. That's what I'm talking about. But your team's girls?
My team is girls.
Okay. Well, it's a very cool thing. Any of the boys at school, what do they think of this? Like your friends that are guys?
Well, they ask me, does people check you to do all of this? And I say, no, it's just a normal game of hockey.
Right. Well, your age, you probably can't check. Isn't it a no-check league? Yeah. But as you get older, you know, your best friends are going to be running into you trying to drive you through through the boards. That's what friends are for. Well, it's great to meet you guys, and I love the fact that you're a sports family.
Thank you.
It's very cool. So, Allie, listen. I need your permission on this. We're going to make you Kid of the Week. Can we make your sister Honorary Kid of the Week as well and load you up?
Yeah.
Okay. And don't forget she did this for you. I know she's your little sister and you have squatter's rights, but Allie could have just thrown you to the weeds. All right?
Thanks, Al.
You're welcome.
All right. That's what sisters are for. Here's what we're going to do. We've got, and Mom, you can actually do this as well. Pair of tickets for My Son the Waiter, Jewish Tragedy, playing at the North Shore Center. It's funny. It's a comedy. It's very funny. Make you laugh. But more importantly to you guys, we're going to give you Lou Malnati's Pizza. 1-800-LOU-TO-GO, loutogo.com, loumalnatis.com. If you put Lou Malnati's in a web address somehow, you're going to get there. An app gift card, you go out and get new headphones if you want, something like that, from app, abt.com. And because you guys need to sleep before you play hockey, should we give them my pillows?
Absolutely.
Oh, these are the best pillows. You guys are going to get my pillows as well from mypillow.com. You want to give a shout-out to anybody?
To my grandma, my pop, and my papa. My papa, before he died, he always listened to you guys.
Oh, that's nice. What was his name?
Eugene.
Eugene. And Scribic. What's grandma's first Scribic. Name?
Jane.
Jane Scribick? The Scribicks. Well, thank you, Scribicks. God bless your grandfather. What'd you call him?
Papa.
Yeah, see, I'm a first-time grandfather. I've got a granddaughter 6 months old. You know what she calls me? Nothing, because she just drools. She just drools. But it's the cutest drool you've ever seen. And big sis?
All my aunts and uncles and family members.
Boy, you guys taking care of family. Look at you.
And family first.
Friends. And dad.
Yeah, how about dad? Yeah, dad wouldn't hurt. I'll tell you what we'll do for dad. We'll give him a ChevyDriveChicago.com, a WGN radio stainless steel travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Nice to see you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for being Kid of the Week.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Through all his loose talk, there's one constant theme. Demonizing Muslims and playing right into the hands of ISIS.
First of all, she voted for the war in Iraq. She wanted to go Libya. You know who's got Libya right now? Her baby. You know who's got Libya right now? And the oil? ISIS!
His proposal to ban 1.5 billion Muslims from even coming to our country, it's a huge propaganda victory for ISIS.
The public has a right to know how these people got here, how they came onto this great land. Why are they here?
714, let's be clear on something. A, they're both right, kind of. B, I have several things to say about the new 800-page Benghazi report coming up, and none of it's good for Hillary Clinton, in my view. And C, the last two killers who were ISIS devotees, at least in words, were both American citizens. So, and yesterday when Mr. Trump decided that he would update his profile, if you will, has changed his ban to countries with terrorists in them. So if you're currently on vacation in Great Britain or France, you can't come home.
Right.
Not on that plan. It's 7:15, and we'll do traffic from Mary, and then Micah Halpern. We'll get Micah Halpern here in just a second. So this 800-page Benghazi report, you know, depending on your political point of view, if you the word Benghazi comes up, you may perk up or you may glaze over. It's important because it goes to the integrity of the people involved. It also goes to the fact that the people who were murdered on that night, which was certainly a sequel to 9/11, their families and their survivors deserve closure. One of the things that's made me nuts, you know, over the years is the fact that the names are never mentioned. But Chris Stevens is the ambassador. Sean Smith was his number one assistant. And the two heroes that came in to try to rescue Stevens and others were Glenn Doherty and Ty Woods. And they all died that night. Now, I'll give you some thoughts on Benghazi coming up, but I also want to focus on what's going on with ISIS. And the guy that knows all the bad guys in the world is Micah Halpern. Good morning, Micah. How are you?
Always good to hear you, Steve.
Nice to talk to you again. Follow Micah Halpern in all things he does at Micah Halpern. Just Google Micah Halpern. You get the whole deal. You get all of it. It's like Trump said in one of those speeches. Hey, yeah, the 2 Corinthians, that's the whole deal. You want Micah Halpern? You just Google MicahHalpern. I hope you've been well. That's a question, Mike. I hope you've been well. And we did we lose Mike or we got a bad phone? We've got a terrible phone.
Oh, no.
All right, now let's take the break. We'll come back, see if we can get him on a better phone line. This is 720 WGN. 7:20, Micah Halpern, an author of the book Thugs, keeping an eye on the worst people in the world. And we check in with Micah often because he's an expert not just on the Middle East, but wherever there is trouble in the world. Good morning again to you, Micah. So we take back Fallujah, we the collective we. It was the Iraqi army that did this?
Yes. Of course, with the assistance of Western air support, because they can't do anything without Western air support. Really independent without Western air support. So they would be massacred without Western support. And that includes actually some Arab support in there, too, which is flying. Remember, there are 14 air forces flying around in that area. 14 different countries are flying their air forces around there. But the major ones are Russia and the United States.
So if we back this up, you were the person that explained this to us when ISIS began their run, that there was a almost a horror movie fear of ISIS when they came in. They were outnumbered, vastly outnumbered, outgunned, yet the Iraqi, the trained Iraqi soldiers and army dropped their weapons and ran because of these rumors that obviously turned out to be true of the horrific nature of what ISIS would do to you if they got you, cutting off your heads and things of that nature. What has turned that around where the Iraqis have been willing to stand and fight?
Well, not only did they run away, they stripped themselves to their underwear and ran away because they were afraid of being identified as soldiers or police.
Right, right.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, it's mind-boggling from our point of view. What's happened is that they've been given increases in salaries. There have been increases in training, but most importantly, the United States and others have actually stepped forward and started bombing ISIS. So they're not all by themselves. They felt as if they were totally isolated. So we hear all the time, let them fight it. It's their issue, their problem. If we let them fight it, ISIS would not only run over Iraq and Syria, they would be running over a lot of other countries now already. As it is, they already have a backup plan, a plan B. Their plan B is Yemen and Libya, and they're doing pretty well in there, and they've already taken a lot of their fighters outside of Syria and Iraq and moved them into Libya and Yemen for their plan B, because they're realizing they're starting to lose in their plan A. So these guys are moving way ahead of us in terms of just basic chess. We checked them here now in this region, and they've started moving with a different strategy totally, and that's the nature of the game of chess. They're playing it. We're not. We're playing Rocky. You know, one punch and the game is over. They're looking at it in a very different way.
All right.
We've got to see that.
All right. Yeah. Well, but doesn't that then bode well for the other areas occupied by ISIS? In other words, is ISIS in trouble?
ISIS is only in trouble in the areas where the United States is helping the locals. Okay? Only in trouble in those areas. So when the United States is using their air support to attack ISIS targets, ISIS is hurting. And it takes a while. It takes months sometimes to pound away at them. But we need local people to go in literally door by door, house by house, to clean these places out. And a lot of times they can't do that. And it takes a long time to do it. And then they have to secure the areas and ISIS doesn't come back. But ISIS has already taken a lot of their percentage fighters, a lot of that percentage, and moved them to other places. ISIS is not necessarily indigenous fighters from Iraq or from Syria. They're coming in a lot from Indonesia. They're coming in a lot from Asia. They're foreign fighters here, and they're moving them into places like in Yemen and Libya. So as a result, it's easier to defeat them because there are fewer of them. As it was, they didn't have hundreds of thousands. They only had tens of thousands. But now, actually, you've got a better chance of taking back the areas in Iraq and Syria. You've got less of a chance of winning in Libya and Yemen. And that's the big issue right now. We're not thinking about their advances and their changes. We're playing yesterday's game. We've got to start playing tomorrow's game to win this.
Right, and that involves a strategy that nobody seems to be willing to commit to fully. All right, so let's move to North Korea with a little.
I'm telling you right now, and I'm telling your listeners, that they're really on the ball here. They're not the best equipped. They're not the best trained. Okay, but what they are certainly is thinking way in advance. They've stolen our weapons. They've taken Western weapons. They've confiscated and bought all kinds of great weapons. They're learning about it on the fly. They're getting better and better at this stuff, and we're not paying any attention to it at all.
Right. The fact that we're allowing them to have that learning curve is outrageous. All right, so North Korea. with the little knucklehead that runs North Korea. They continue to run missile tests. He continues to make threats. He's in with China. He's out with China. On a 1 to 10, 10 being the worst, where would you rank the level of threat from North Korea now?
So the problem with North Korea is it's a character you have to evaluate. You have to evaluate a real kook, right?
Right.
So it's not like I can evaluate Hitler and Stalin better than I can evaluate him, right? Because I understood them. I understand their motivation. I understand what's going on. This is virtually a child, right, in a child's body, all right? It's not a child in an adult's body. It's a child in a child's body. And then we have a real big problem. I would put him, because of the unpredictability, at a 7 and an 8.
Wow.
Because we have problems there. Now, I don't think he's crazy enough to make such waves to bring the United States into the conflict. But I do think that Japan and China are really living on the edge there with him. And that's a big problem, because how are they going to open these? It takes a lot of maturity not to respond to the kind of saber-rattling that he's doing. And that kind of maturity isn't very common in some of these big powers, especially like China. They're not mature in their responses. And I want that to be very clear. Maturity is hugely important in not responding. Okay, it's not called cowardice. It's called maturity sometimes, because you don't want to downward spiral a region and the world into a conflict. And that's where the issue is. I think he's playing games. And the games he's playing, maybe he'll turn around and say the next week, this guy was brilliant. I doubt that. But I can tell you that I can't predict his actions by any stretch of the imagination. There's no way for me to actually look at point one and say he's going to point two or point seven tomorrow.
All right, before we run out of time, which we're doing very quickly here, this Brexit has created an unbelievable amount of economic instability. Has the economic instability caused by this opened the door for potentially more trouble from the bad guys?
Yeah, the economic instability of the Brexit is very interesting. First, I should tell you, that I'm worried about the price of scotch increasing. Second, they produce a billion bottles of scotch a year. And a billion. And they
a billion bottles of scotch? I thought Kentucky was the winner.
Yeah, not just that. You should note that France imports 225 million of those. They import more than the United States. But Scotland wants independence now. So this is just the beginning of the dominoes falling, which is important also. I think that the impact is being generated by a lot of news. No one's really covering this. I'm on news all the time, you know that.
Yeah.
I've been pitching this story for months. The Europeans, the Israelis, all have been talking about Brexit. Only Thursday were people even interested, and that was the day of the election, the
right.
vote, which is hilarious. That said, that excitement of that caused the stocks to tank. But I think it's going to come back to somewhat normal in the next few days or so, maybe a week or two. We're going to see some changes. The bad guys, though, did not short the stock on Brexit. So in that way, I don't see a big problem there. I do see that England is no longer the United States' best friend on the European side, because they're not apart. Remember, England, Great Britain, is an island off the coast of Europe.
Right, right. Well, that's why the whole immigration argument is nonsense. It's an island. Nobody has more ways to secure their borders than England.
Right. Because you can either come in by plane, by tunnel, or by ship. And that's it. It's a total island. It's an island off the coast. We learned it from children's story, Winnie the Pooh.
We
described England as an island off the coast of Europe.
Yeah.
Now, they can imagine themselves as European, but the Europeans never thought themselves connected to England, ever, and Great Britain, of course, today. And that's an important component. I think that they're concerned that certainly the economic question, they want their pounds, they want an independence in their pound, they never wanted to be connected to the euro. All these things sort of are bundled all up together. You've got the young versus the young wanted to stay in, the old wanted out. All these kinds of divisions are important elements in terms of the Brexit. But I can tell you, point blank, but from the way in which I see what's happening, this is a balloon which is going to burst, and everything will come back to almost normal after it dies down. People were reading Brexit on Thursday, I got to tell you, and they never even knew what it stood for. That's how small a story it is. What? And that's how the impact is. So they're 4% of the world's economy. New York and California together are multi times the economy of England.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's remarkable. And thank you, Micah. Stand by. That's what's remarkable about this story is that $3 trillion in paper wealth could go away so quickly in an overreaction of the markets based on the actual magnitude of the wealth involved. All right, it's 7:30. That's Micah Halperin. Google Micah, M-I-C-A-H, Halperin, H-A-L-P-E-R-N. Follow him on all platforms. You'll be well educated. Dan Hampton will join us in a few moments to talk about the passing of Buddy Ryan. We just found out that Buddy Ryan died, and nobody knew him quite as well as Hamp, as far as I'm concerned, from a professional side. So Hamp will be on to talk about him. All right, we got to come back and do the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
20 seconds remaining now. Mike Ditka being hoisted on the shoulders of his team. 13, 10 seconds, 9, 8, 7, 6,
Buddy
five,
Ryan too,
coach. 4, 3, 2, 1. Believe it, the dream is reality. The Chicago Bears are world champions of football.
7:42, Buddy Ryan, one of the great names in Chicago sports history, and always will be. Dan Hampton joins us now. And Hamp, the obvious thing here is just condolences to you. I know you knew it was coming, but it's still a very sad day.
Hey, I appreciate that, Steve, and I appreciate all the other folks that have and will be reaching out to, you know, the players on that team. And just listening to Wayne Larrivee there. I mean, tell me, when has an assistant coach ever acclaimed such notoriety because of, you know, what, his impact, his value to the team? Buddy Ryan was special. And, you know, it was really, really special for us the last couple of, you know, 5, 8, 10 years, because we all know that he and Coach Ditka were at odds for a long time. But, you know, I think 6 years ago we had a 25-year anniversary, and right, Buddy and Ditka, you know, they bury the hatchet. It was truly, it was legitimate, and it was special, and it was great for both of those guys. You know, and they're both, when you look at the pantheon of coaching in the NFL, both of those names will be, you know, prominent from now going forward. But neither one won a Super Bowl without the other one. So it was truly great that at the end here, it's kind of come full circle. And And Coach Dick and Buddy really were able to, you know, embrace.
You know, Hamp, I think that you could easily make the argument that the modern era of coaching with a defensive head coach, an offensive head coach, and a head coach in title started with your team. Because even though it was never fully declared, they were as co-head coaches as you could possibly be. And that seemed to explode into this new era of coaching specialists that we see all the time now.
Very well could be. You know, and let me just say this, you know, that 30 for 30 thing that we had last winter, and Buddy was such a prominent part of it, and justifiably so. And when I met with the young man that did the special, I tried to emphasize to him. I said, you know, have you talked to Buddy? And he said, no. And he said, I'm trying to. I said, well, there's no way you can tell the story of the 85 Bears without Buddy Ryan being, you know, one of the most important storylines. So all that being said, he also, you know, said that 85 team, it changed the way sports franchises operated. He said up until that time, everything was, as you said, you know, top down organizational, and even the sports information departments and the marketing and all that stuff, it exploded after that team. And again, so much of that would have never happened, would have never even come to fruition without Buddy Ryan.
Hamp, take us back to the letter that the players sent to George Halas asking that when Neil Armstrong was fired, that Buddy Ryan be retained.
It's funny that you bring that up. You know, about a month ago, Gary Fensick and I and Lenny Walterscheid. I know some of you guys remember Lenny. Lenny was, sure, a great player on the Bears from like 77 through 83. And he was an all-time favorite of Buddy. And we went down to see Buddy. And Fincic had had you know printed a copy of that letter, and we read it to Buddy again there in his living room in Louisville, and you know it's hard to keep a dry eye, but the essence of the letter, and a lot of people in Chicago don't know, but Neil Armstrong was a fine man, but the team was going nowhere with him as head coach, and we knew there would be changes. And Gary Fincic came to all the other defensive players saying, "We understand they're going to get a new coach, but George Halas needs to keep Buddy and the defensive staff because we've come so far and would be losing ground if we, you know, if Buddy was sent, you know, packing." So Fincic wrote an amazing letter, and in essence, it just said, you know, "Mr. Halas, you know, please listen to us. We started 27th in the league, and now, you know, with a 6-10 team, we're like the fourth rated defense. We're getting better by the week, and it's all because of Buddy. You can't let him go." And I got to tell you, I was privy to an awful lot of special things in my career, but I'll never forget the morning I was sitting in the meeting room, and the door opened, and there was George Halas, and he came in and he told the coaches, "Take a hike." And he gets up in front of us and says, "When I started this league back in 1920, I knew it'd be special, but never before have I felt such an affinity for my team, for these players that I have, until I read this letter." And I tell you what, I mean, it was just, it was spellbinding. And he said, "You know, no matter what I do, Buddy Ryan and his staff will be a part of it, and I'm extending their contract with the Rays for 3 more years. And if Fincic doesn't write that letter, who knows? Who knows?" So, I mean, I'm just saying it was one of those, you know, believe it or not, Ripley moments.
Hamp, in this day and age when athletes and their kids are so close and on the field, and it's cool to see them bring the kids around, but Buddy brought his kids around too. What was that like for you and for them kind of looking up to you guys as role models?
Absolutely. You know, I was a rookie in 79, and Rex and Rob are like 16-year-old twins. And, you know, they were rambunctious. And yet they were always trying to get somebody to buy them beer and all. Just, you know,
what? Rex and Rob? And really?
Those guys, you know, they're always, you know, like scrapping around. And, the next year they didn't come back and be ball boys in training camp. I asked Buddy what happened. He said, "Oh, they rolled the farm truck and now they're hauling hay to pay it off." You know, I mean, it's just, Buddy was different in the sense that, I mean, there was no precept where, "Oh, well, you can't bring your kids to the job, you can't do this, you can't do that." Buddy, hey, you know, he brought those kids around, and we all know what's going on now. They're in Buffalo and thriving in the NFL world. So I just got to tell you, you know, over the last few years when we'd see Buddy, it was amazing to me. Buddy, he touched so many lives. See, he was a part of a Super Bowl with Joe Namath and the Jets, and then he went to 4 Super Bowls with the Vikings, and Alan Page and Carl Eller and all those Hall of Famers but his most special, and then, you know, when he was a head coach in Philadelphia and then in Arizona, but his most special stop ever. And every time we would be there, and I had seen some of the other players that he coached over the years, you know, Reggie White and Clyde Simmons, guys, and they would always say, you know, "Buddy loves us, but he doesn't love us like he loved you guys in Chicago." And I just got to tell you, you know, every night I say my blessings. I thank the good Lord for the fact that Buddy Ryan came into my life, because it changed it forever.
Who was the first guy you thought of calling when you heard the news today that, you know, that shared that experience on the team?
I got a call from Danny Neal at 5:30 this morning and said that Buddy had passed away at 5 o'clock. And the services would be probably Friday. So in anticipation of that and, making arrangements, the first one I thought about was Gary Fincic. And it'll be just a process through the course of the morning where, sure, you know, I'll talk to Doug Plank, I'll talk to, you know, Lenny Walterscheid, Otis, and Steve McMichael. We'll all, we're all probably, you know, come up with a number of different plans on how, you know, we're going to best send Buddy off. But the one thing about Buddy Ryan that I really can't emphasize enough is everybody talks about his coaching and his X's and O's. And there's no doubt in my mind that in the last 40, 50 years of the NFL, he has been one of the handful of guys that changed it. And he did change it, just like, you know, Bill Walsh changed the offense with the 49ers back in the 80s. But that being said, as special as he was as a coach, he was even more special as a human being. And, you know, I got to tell you, each and every one of us, we were like, you know, like his grandkids, and he treated us like that. And it wasn't a cold, hostile environment. It was, we would lay on the floor and he would smoke his pipe and we'd watch film together. I mean, it was, you have no idea how close that team was. But one of the best testaments to what Buddy was, he traded Chris Carter to the Vikings. And he said he was trading him because he wanted to save his life, because Chris Carter in years subsequent, you know the story, how he was
rolling with the wrong guys in Philly. He had to get out of there.
Yeah, and even though Buddy, he was a big part of it, but for the good of the player, and that just tells you so much about Buddy. Buddy knew how important it was to win in the NFL, but he always cared about the player over winning.
You know, you think about the people that are going to be there for the services, and I think about Harry Carey's funeral and any great sports legend that passes, and the best things are the stories that get told. So I know it's going to be sad, Hamp, but I look forward for you and to you being able to swap some stories you've all told a few times just to have some more laughs. And you know, God bless their family. You know, even though you know it's coming for a long time, it's still a sad thing, and it's a moment in Chicago sports history for sure. So travel safe, and we'll talk to you later.
God bless, Buddy Ryan. Thank you, Steve.
There you go. So, you imagine the stories that those guys can't tell?
Well, they told. Yeah, I mean, they told the ones they could tell. They told that 30 for 30. A lot of them.
Right, but the ones they can't tell, yes, that they just tell to each other.
Yeah,
something else. Thank you, Hamp, for doing this.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Our band sounded a little sickly. Is our band okay, Dean, do you think?
Well, you know, it's summer doldrums.
Going into the 4th of July weekend, the band may be planning on taking a weekend off.
Yeah, sounds like they've already started taking the weekend off.
I know, they've booked many festivals. That's the only song they play, so it doesn't take long to see them.
A lot of people don't know that this show still uses old tape recordings. We haven't updated anything. We're actually using...
Reel-to-reel tape. I like the sound of it. You know, I'm a guy, you know me, I'm old school.
I like the dimension of it. I like hearing the scratches.
Yeah.
We actually play mine on an 8-track tape. You think it's easy to find an 8-track player? It's not.
You know, my favorite thing about the 8-track was when you put it in, it would clunk like you hit something.
Right.
Like it ran into a wall.
Right.
Clunk!
When it changed channels, you know, like in the middle of a song.
So smooth. Get a bump.
You crazy kids don't know what you're missing.
With your digital perfection, whatever, please. All right, coming up on the Dean Show.
What?
Coming up on the Dean Experience, Justin Timberlake took a bunch of grief over something I don't think he should have taken grief over.
I agree with you on this.
What do you mean on this? We disagree on a lot of things or what?
No, but
okay.
I'm just saying on this particular issue, I agree with you.
Also, because, you know, this is the music of my people. We'll also have stories on Lil Wayne, Shug Knight, and Chris Brown.
That's right.
And the latest from Prince. By the way, over 100,000 people have now claimed they're Prince's son.
That's right.
Trying to get the money.
Steve has started wearing purple to all station events from now on.
Do you know that I had a Luther Vandross lavender blazer?
No, you did not.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
you looked very
circa
smart.
Like 1991, I thought I looked great
in the picture that Robert Feeder ran with the story of your contract renewal yesterday. I believe you've got a super bright purple shirt on.
It's got a lavender look, yeah.
I like that, and I like how you're the pose that you're in looks like somebody went, "Hey, Steve," and you turned your head.
And it was someone I was pleased to see.
And he just happened to have his index finger on his cheek.
The only thing that was missing was, this is a standard celebrity move, when you see the chin in the hand or like the perplexed thing with the fingers underneath the chin, right. You're trying to cover up the other chin.
Right. You're holding your four or five other chins.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a very nice picture.
Woman that took the picture, that picture in particular, she did a headshot session recently. Maybe the only headshots I've ever liked. But the headshot she took, she used special chin reduction technology, or they call it CRT in the business, trying to get it down to one or maybe one and a half. All right, so how are things at Channel 9 this morning before we get into the Lister?
Everything is fine and dandy today. It's very kind of quiet. I just got an email. I like to read my personal email.
Let's go to the email, Dean. What do you have?
Telling me I'm going to, or informing me that I'm going to be hosting our 4th of July fireworks special.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It's called Chicago Summer Blast.
I used to do that with Paul Conrad, and then something happened where they didn't let us on TV anymore.
Well, this is why I wanted to ask you about to see what the history was of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure it's going to be fun bringing the fireworks broadcast to everybody with a million or so of my closest friends down crammed into Navy Pier.
Yeah. Well, where do you go, though? Because, you know, it used to be just one fireworks thing. Don't they do, like, three now? There's one on North Avenue, and there's one North Avenue Beach.
I think it's just Navy Pier now.
Oh, it is. They put it back.
With the budget cut. Well, it used to be at Monroe Harbor, the city's official one. Used to be down, you know, kind of centered where Taste of Chicago would be going.
Right. That's where we used to do it. Because
that's where
now,
you guys used to do it.
Now it's just a guy named Bob with a sprinkler. He just runs around with a sparkler. Sparkler.
Right.
He actually sprinkles when he sparks.
You have an emergency sprinkler there in case something happens.
He has a flare.
Yeah, he has a flare in one hand and the sparkler in the other.
He does have a flare for sprinklers.
But they have it. They used to have it on the 3rd. That was the official night.
Right, and the Grant Park Orchestra would play.
When is it now?
Overture. It's going to be on the 4th of
on
July.
The 4th, yeah.
On the 4th?
On the
That's a school night.
On the actual 4th of July. It is actually a school night.
Yeah.
And it's going to be around 9:30.
That's no good for me.
Our show is going to start at 9:30.
Don't they know what time you get up?
Yes.
Why can't they make Sapelsa do it? What's he do? I mean, honestly, he's sitting on his tush all afternoon.
I asked him, what's the big deal about doing the fireworks like 2 in the afternoon?
Exactly. Yeah, Sapelsa. He's got to comb out his hairpiece.
So did you have, was there a problem that you didn't?
Here's what I think happened, and I'm serious that I believe this is what happened. There were some incidents in and around Grant Park the last year we did it. We did it 2 or 3 years in a row.
That you started?
That I did not start. Oh. However, at one point on the air, Paul Conrad, not Steve Cochran, Paul Conrad said, we saw some U.S. Marshals running behind us. There were gangbangers in the area. We saw some U.S. Marshals running behind us and guys on horses running behind us going in one particular direction. And Paul Conrad said something like, we should probably duck since the gang activity started. It was something like that. And I believe those comments were attributed to me. And here's why I think that's true. I'm not on Channel 9. He still is. So I believe that's what happened. But no one ever admitted that to me.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah. But I'll be very careful with my words then.
And you know how much Paul loves horses.
Yeah, it could have been a nasty reaction to horses.
Not crazy about horses.
No. He's an odd duck, but we like
him. I miss that little combination of you and Paul on television.
I thought it was great TV because at one point we actually didn't let the camera pan to the fireworks. We just said, keep it on us. We're entertaining.
Yeah. That's what people want for the 4th of July weekend. You can see fireworks anywhere. You can't see Paul Conrad and Steve Cochran making their brand of fireworks.
I tried to get him to put the camera in a particular way where we could do shadow puppets on Lake Michigan.
Gee, and I wonder why they never asked you guys back.
Recreating the signing of the Declaration of Independence, puppets.
Right.
Oh, I should mention that on this show I'm going to be dressed up as Hamilton.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm going to be.
And by the way, good call.
I just thought of that. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to dress up as Hamilton on this show.
Yeah, because Hamilton's great no matter what's happening.
Yeah.
Year ago, nobody knew him.
The kids love it. The kids love their Hamilton.
Now he's America's favorite dead founder. It's 8:18. We'll do traffic. We'll come back, tell you about all those show business stories, allegedly.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 7.
Top man, pro and steady.
Dean Richards back with us. All right, so what's going on with Justin Timberlake?
Well, you know, this past Sunday night at the BET Awards, Grey's Anatomy actor Jesse Williams.
Who?
Gave a Jesse Williams?
Jesse, oh, the dude, oh, with the dude with the blue eyes.
He is Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy, yeah, actor, right.
Yeah, he's good. He is an African American dude with these very blue eyes.
Very, 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 very blue eyes. Was a model at one time.
Yep, me too.
Just like Steve. Yep. Was given a humanitarian award on the BET Awards and gave a very, very impassioned speech about racial injustice, social injustice.
Kill Whitey.
It was a Black Lives Matter speech about the responsibility of that we all have toward controlling our own destiny, and not the words that you just
said. It was a little generalized, in my view. It was a little bit, you know.
It was painting all people with one brushstroke.
Yeah, and I understand he was speaking for those who he's not necessarily a part of. But again, he's a very, and I agree with you, because Dean, and I think share a short fuse on this. Just because you're a celebrity doesn't mean you don't have a right to speak out on social matters. You do. And if you don't use the platform you have, I think you're missing the point at certain times. But also, I think white folks in general get a little tired of being labeled as racist because they're white. And I thought his speech came across that way a little bit.
Well, and you know, in his defense on this, he was speaking to what African-American people are tired of being labeled as,
mm-hmm.
which makes this even more ironic that he was, you know, one of the points that he was making. And, you know, I don't speak for him, and I'm certainly not, you know, trying to what happened to Justin Timberlake was him empathizing with Jesse Williams and getting in a lot of trouble. And I'm not trying to do that. But I find ironic that in a speech that is about don't paint all people in one way, he was painting all people.
That's a great point.
Another kind
that's
of people all
yeah, yeah,
in one way, which was ironic. But that said, it was a very moving speech about racial injustice.
So Justin Timberlake tweeted out, "Blow it out your butt, Jesse."
Justin Timberlake gets on the internet.
Oh, and that's not what he said. Okay.
Gets on the Twitter. Because that's, you know, that's what all the kids like to do.
They get on the Twitter.
They get on the
Twitter. If they can't get on the Hulu, they go to the Twitter.
They go right to the Twitter and said that he was inspired by his speech.
Seems complimentary to me.
That's what Justin Timberlake said. But then others on Twitter started criticizing Justin Timberlake. Like, how dare you comment on what he is speaking to, a speech directed toward African-American people, when you have appropriated black music and black culture. And then people started piling on Justin Timberlake for, you know, trying to empathize and say that he understands the black experience when he's not black. And all he's done is take black music and black culture. They wanted him to apologize for being part of the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, which he really has never said anything about. And Justin Timberlake then makes the fatal error, as we've all known, of responding on Twitter to some of the criticisms.
Yeah, you got to ignore it. It's hard, man, but you got to ignore it.
Yeah, the whole thing just blew up during the day yesterday. This back and forth between Justin Timberlake, which ended with him saying, "I just apologize to anyone who felt I was out of turn. I have nothing but love for you and for all of us." But all the guy did was say that he was inspired by the guy's words.
Yeah, a ridiculous social media reaction as usual. All right, what's going on with Suge Knight?
Suge Knight
still locked up, isn't he?
He is actually still locked up. That's not preventing him from suing Chris Brown. And
West Side.
Send your tweets to the Cochran Show.
That was Dave
For this. He's suing Chris Brown in an L.A. Nightclub because Suge Knight got shot in this nightclub.
Right.
So shot 7 times at a party that was hosted by Chris Brown. He says there wasn't enough security, so he's suing everybody. And he says that now his fear, because of that shooting, led Suge Knight to flee another nightclub where he was several months later, where he wind up hitting two guys in a parking lot.
That's why he's in jail. So he's backing it all the way up to Chris Brown.
He's backing it up to Chris Brown. He says that's why he wound up killing a guy for whom he is on trial for murder charges.
Yeah, Chris Brown, not a very sympathetic character. So, but that seems like a stretch to me.
Trying to get his medical expenses, past, future, and present, all paid by Chris Brown.
Prince has 9 million offspring. We've determined that since he passed away. Right. But what's the latest?
Turns out, I found out during the last commercial break, I am also one of them.
Oh, good for you. It looks like you're going to get $8.
That could be how it goes, because yesterday they had one of the first hearings trying to determine who will split up the $300 million fortune that Prince left behind. So a judge yesterday in a probate court set some ground rules. Everyone's going to have to go through DNA testing, Steve. That's why I've left that empty cup right next to where you're sitting.
Yep.
You could take care of that later on.
I have filled it up four different times.
he drinks a lot of coffee during the show.
Yep.
So they're going to do DNA tests on everyone. Under Minnesota law, Prince has a full sister, several half-siblings, and as Steve has mentioned, many, many, many other people who feel like they are entitled to part of the $300 million.
The two guys from Air Supply are now claiming they're Prince's son. I know we're almost out of time, Dean, but I sure wish you had a Tarzan story.
Well, you know, as it turns out, we interviewed Tarzan.
What?
And Jane. Do you know that Tarzan, I didn't realize this till I was looking a couple of things up this morning. Tarzan, the character of Tarzan, is the longest running character in motion pictures.
I did not know that.
The first Tarzan movie was made in 1918.
Come on!
Seriously, a silent film called Tarzan...
King of the Jungle?
Tarzan of the Jungle, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. It was 1918. There have been 50 different Tarzan movies since then. The latest is going to open on Friday, called The Legend of Tarzan.
I'm being told that Lyle Dean was at the premiere in 1918.
He was.
Great coverage.
He was. He brought Mary Pickford as his date.
nice pull by you. Wow. Very impressive.
Yeah, the three people understood.
There are some people in full care homes right now, right, who are loving this.
My 93-year-old mom just went, who?
By the way, still dead.
Mary Pickford, not my mom.
Right.
So this new Tarzan is a Swedish actor, Alexander Skarsgård.
He's good.
He was in True Blood, and we talked to him over the weekend, and he talked about how he's approaching taking on the new role, the latest, of Tarzan the Ape Man.
By starting in London, you kind of avoid the what could be slightly cheesy, the more traditional loincloth situation. This, the fact that he's already acclimated to life in Victorian England, and he's a proper British gentleman, you know, wearing a three-piece suit, and then slowly, when you know, so going back to the jungle, he's still in his safari outfit, you know, the Victorian kind of the British explorer outfit. And then slowly the layers come off. You want to surprise the audience and give them a Tarzan that they don't expect, but you also want to give them what they want.
Yeah, so there's the new Tarzan. I saw it last night. Steve, this is not a review. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the new Tarzan.
But that doesn't mean you're endorsing it or reviewing it.
I'm not reviewing it by any stretch of the imagination, but I got to say, I enjoyed it.
Was it loincloth night at the theater? Did you get one when you went in?
I wore one. I thought more people would be in costume. It turned out, who would guess at Navy Pier I'd be the only one in a loincloth?
Yeah, especially on a Monday.
Shaved my legs and everything.
You know?
Took about a day and a half. I started on Sunday afternoon.
You actually had a construction crew come in, put scaffolding up. All right, man. Enjoy your day.
You too.
That's Dean. We're back after this with a big story on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And the Dan Hampton interview will be up on podcast after the show today. It's up now, I'm being told. Get your podcast at WGNRadio.com. Also at the WGN Radio app, TuneIn, iTunes, and wherever else you tend to find podcasts, you tend to find us, the Steve Cochran Show. And we talked to Hamp last hour about the passing of Buddy Ryan. Dave, you were at that Super Bowl. Any memories jump out?
Well,
obviously a lot, but anything in particular that relates to Buddy Ryan?
Well, you know, it's funny when Dan was talking about the letter, and this
was the Gary Fensick letter.
Yeah, the letter that the Bears players wrote to George Halas. I covered the news conference where George Halas pulled out the letter. I remember it was at his office downtown in the Loop, and he was raving about this letter he got from his players. He said it was the most unique letter he had ever received in all of his years in football, and it prompted him to keep Buddy Ryan as the Bears' defensive guru at a time he was making a change at head coach. And
you take that backwards to that point in time. Was Halas known for warm and fuzzy moments?
Well, in all fairness, I didn't cover him when he was a coach. And this was late in his life, and he sort of came back onto the scene in the early 80s where he had sort of stepped back, but became one day he showed up at Halas Hall and was upset over the Bears' offensive performance the day before when they had been held to something like minus 24 rushing yards against the Lions.
Yeah, that'll upset the owner.
That will do it. But he was, yeah, this was a really unique moment, I think.
And how many times did you actually cross paths with Buddy through the years?
Oh, a lot, because I traveled with the Bears back in those days. And he was always, you know, he was always entertaining. He was always good for a quote.
Was he approachable?
Oh, very, very much so.
So he understood the media had a job to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he didn't always sanitize his language for the benefit of the media, which that's okay. There's a lot of guys who on that team who didn't.
Sure.
But Buddy was always good to me. I had nothing but respect for the man and never had a problem with
him. Did you have a sense while it was going on, because where was I in 1985? I'm trying to think of all the places I've been thrown out of. I guess I was in Miami. Did you have a sense of the separation that had gone on early on, well before it broke as a national story between Ditka and Ryan?
I think everybody kind of sensed it because
So the Bears didn't really try to hide it.
I don't remember it being hidden, because if you really go back, this was a carryover from the previous regime where the offense and the defense. Now, you had Walter Payton on the offensive side of the ball. He had a defense that was very good, and the offense generally did not hold up its end of the bargain despite having the best player in the NFL on the offensive side.
Sure.
So, you know, I think there was always that tension between offense and defense. There would be times where it looked like the offense was coming around. But remember, Walter Payton set the NFL single-game rushing record with 275 yards, and again, the Bears won 10-7.
Is that right? I don't remember this. I didn't
against
remember
the Vikings.
Score.
So, I mean, it's not like even when he was at his best, they put up a lot of points.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Jim McMahon, one of the great Bears quarterbacks of all time, ain't exactly Joe Montana. McMahon is closer to Trent Dilfer. He was a hardcore player and a winner and a guy who could win with a team that was defense dominated, but he wasn't putting up incredible numbers and incredible yardages. And
right.
You know, there were so many egos on that team, including the coaches. Because the funny thing to me when I think about Buddy Ryan is Ditka, to me, as a guy and as a player, seems like exactly the kind of guy Buddy Ryan would have loved, because he was tough. He was all about football. He was all about winning. But I think Ditka, in his first head coaching job, also wanted to be the control guy, and Buddy wasn't giving up any control.
Well, I think that was part of it. I think also Ditka made a comment once that offense was about technique or strategy, coaching. Defense was about being brutal, which was kind it was kind of a slam at the defense in terms of, okay, these guys, they're just going out there, it's just brute force. Offense, you have to think about what you're doing.
Mongo, get guy with ball.
Right. But the 46 defense was, this
absolute
was a big
strategy.
Step.
Yeah.
It was a big step in football. I mean, it really, as Hamp said, it kind of changed the way we looked at the game and the way people played football and the way they played defense.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely
true. You had to have smart guys on defense to play that.
No doubt about it. Buddy Ryan, after an extended illness, has passed away, and we'll continue to talk about it throughout the day, to be sure. Thanks for that insight, Dave. Well, if you're on the far left, you're going to just glaze over when you hear the word Benghazi. If you're on the far right, you start to foam at the mouth. As always, the truth lies in the middle. If you go back to 2012, I remember being on the radio and talking about this and just being outraged. In a matter of weeks before the 2012 presidential election, in a race that appeared to be quite close and turned out to be, by way of popular vote, fairly close, but electorally turned out to be a landslide. We had the death of an American ambassador overseas. And the death of an American ambassador is just short of an act of war. So you expected a vociferous response. You expected loud, anger-focused response. And if you remember, what we got from the Obama White House and what we got from the State Department was this is a reaction to a Muhammad-slamming video, and that's all it is. Well, what we now know because of Hillary Clinton's emails is that she lied. As she has about many things, because she said to her own daughter, Chelsea, on that night, we know it's terrorists. These are all facts. You can find these as facts. Now, because of that, you can certainly call her integrity into question. But if you're on the far right, you've already done that. Why is it important now? Well, it's important because the memories of Glenn Doherty and Ty Woods for their families, and of Sean Smith, who was Chris Stevens' principal aide, and Ambassador Chris Stevens, well, it's a big deal. You had four Americans murdered on the 11th anniversary of 9/11, and essentially the White House and the State Department created, and this is being very charitable here, a diversion because the election was coming up. And here's why. Knocking out Gaddafi a year earlier was a really big deal. And the Libyan policy that was shepherded by Obama and also by the State Department and Hillary Clinton was a big deal. Don't think that Hillary Clinton in 2012 wasn't thinking about 2016. Don't think that President Obama wasn't just thinking about what was happening in Libya at that moment in the upcoming election, but what the Middle East may look like, that he had to continue to be the President of the United States and shepherd, and also his own legacy. Those were all points to be made. What we know in all likelihood not to be true is that the State Department and the Defense Department stepped aside and let those four men be murdered. That appears to be nonsense. But what does appear to be true is massive bad management at the State Department and terrible decisions in the White House that eventually led to Susan Rice being traipsed out on all the talk shows to say, no, it's the video, it's the video, it's the video. Well, behind the scenes, everybody in the White House was saying, it's terrorism, it's terrorism, it's terrorism. Labels do matter sometimes, and they certainly matter in the death of Americans, as they did on that day. So why was Chris Stevens in Benghazi? He was in Benghazi because funding for a potential consulate in Benghazi was about to run out. The opportunity to actually create an American consulate in Benghazi. Keep in mind that the embassy's in Tripoli, the consulate in Benghazi, which is a huge city in Libya and a very important city to Libya, could help stabilize the country, which was a hot mess after Gaddafi was taken out. And I, by the way, I'm in the same camp I've always been in. I think the world's a better place without Saddam Hussein and his nutty sons. I think Libya's a better place without Gaddafi, but I don't have to live there. And if it had been better handled in Iraq and in Libya afterwards, maybe you don't have the ISIS problem that you have now and the Al-Qaeda problem in North Africa. So what does this all mean? Well, it means a lot to a lot of different people. Greg Hicks was a senior State Department diplomat who you may remember gave some very emotional testimony defending Chris Stevens, because one of the things the State Department put out and the White House put out is Chris Stevens took that risk and he shouldn't have taken that risk. And if he knew it was so bad in North Africa, he should have demanded more attention and should have demanded that security be stepped up. Greg Hicks said he did. Greg Hicks was a guy with a 25 or 30 year career as a diplomat in the State Department, and he took a risk that his career would be ruined by this because he spoke out against the Clinton-run State Department. And what happened? He got demoted. That's what we do to whistleblowers. It's outrageous. So Hillary Clinton has a lot to answer for here, and it's not going to bring anybody back. But I think it would be hard to argue that one of her worst moments were in the midst of a really difficult hearing, and she sat down for a lot of questioning over this, but in a really difficult hearing when the discussion continued to focus on why she made decisions she made and when she made them and how it happened as if she were on trial, because frankly she was. Her reaction was just outrageous.
Not the fact.
But
and the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now, honestly, I will do my best to answer your questions about this, but the fact is that people were trying in real time to get to the best information. The IC has a process, I understand, going with the other committees to explain how these
It breaks down into some detail
about,
that doesn't relate to the comment. What difference does it make? Well, the difference it makes is to the family of those four men that died, and the difference that it makes is that there was, in my opinion, and by all reasonable accounts when you look at this, a concerted effort to move on with the election and move away from the truth of what actually happened. And that, to me, is outrageous. Hillary Clinton should answer for that. And she should have to pay some sort of price for that. If it includes moderates that don't vote for her, I understand. But again, this goes to the same. This is why this election is such a nightmare. Because if Hillary Clinton were a decent candidate, she'd win in a landslide. If Donald Trump were a decent candidate, he'd win in a landslide. But with her lack of honesty and his absolute lunacy, I don't know who I'm voting for. Do you? That's why we're frustrated. But it's not a great day for Hillary Clinton, and it shouldn't be. And I certainly hope at some point she's able to reconcile the facts of the case, because facts is not her first move. 8:58, Wintrust Community Bank's Hour ends next on 720 WGN.
Well, I got me a five, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Woo-hoo! 9:10, our friend Orion Samuelson standing by. Where in the world are you today?
Well, today I'm in Huntley, Illinois, getting ready for a visit tonight to our new hospital in Huntley. The hospital will be opening in August, and Gloria and I had a little work in getting it here, and so tonight they're holding tours for people who were involved in attracting the hospital. You know, it sits next to a Del Webb Sun City of 5,800 homes. And so we're proud that the hospital will be open by August, and we'll get our first look at it tonight.
No, that's great. Now, I think John DeCosta and I are bringing a stand-up show out there.
Well, I haven't heard from John. He chewed me out for not getting him the information he wanted, but now I'll chew him out because he hasn't told me what's happening. So, but yes, I'm hoping.
This is a staff fight I'm going to have to intercede on. Boy, let me tell you something. When Orion and John DeCosta go at it, it's like two rams on top of a hill just crashing their horns together.
Yeah, we're ugly. But, we have a 400-seat auditorium at Prairie Lodge in Sun City. We've done many, many shows there over the years, and it'll be great to have the GN show out there.
I had a couple of agricultural questions, if you're taking this. And by the way, I think it'd be good whenever we take this this moment during the week and we talk to you, because there's a million times, you know how many times, oh, I run into people that go, you know, I love listening to Orion for all these years, and I don't have a clue what he's talking about because I don't know farming. So if you have any question you've ever wondered about Orion, about the details of the numbers that he has always provided, what's a frozen pork belly, that type of thing.
That's gone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're right now, there's none on sale. They're all gone. 312-981-7200 is the number you could call or text. All right. So this Brexit thing. There is a large farming economy to the UK, is there not?
There is. And in the European Union, France, Germany, all major producers of agricultural products. But when Brexit surprised the world, and it certainly surprised me, I did not expect that. My first thought was probably by Wednesday of next week, a lot of traders will be looking at prices of stocks lower than they've seen in a long time, and that means buying time. And I think we're beginning to see that today. It didn't have as much impact on the agricultural trade because regardless of what happens, people have to eat. And so we saw a reaction Friday because all of the markets tumbled on Friday. But then yesterday we got back to weather because right now, would you believe, we're having corn that is beginning to tassel. And whenever you want my annual explanation of the sex life of a corn plant, I will give it to you. But
it is time for that again, the detasseling of the corn. That's an annual event.
Corn porn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, corn porn. That's what we called it.
Yeah.
And basically, when the corn plant reaches the height that some of the plants are now, you'll get a tassel out the top. In that tassel is, well, I guess I'd compare it to sperm. And then halfway up the stalk, you begin to get the beginning of an ear. And the first thing you see is silk coming out of the end of the top end of the ear.
Yeah.
Well, in order to produce a kernel of corn on that cob, a bit of sperm, whatever you want to call it, from the top, must catch one of those silks. And the interesting thing is that I have yet to find an ear of corn that doesn't have an even number of kernels. And I'm fascinated every year by the fact that when we get the tassel dropping its stuff onto the silk of the ear of corn, we get corn.
Yeah, the corn gods have figured out the engineering of this bad boy a long time ago, haven't they?
A long time ago.
Yeah, no question about it.
This has been going on forever. But, you know, the old saying, knee high by the 4th of July.
Not true.
Disappeared decades ago, really, with the genetic modification that they're able to do and that sort of thing. And so all of our corn, I'm guessing, will be over knee high. And in central Illinois, listener called yesterday and said, I'm beginning to see tasseling. We saw tasseling of sweet corn a week or week and a half ago, but now field corn is catching up. So,
all right, a couple of questions then from our texters. Orion, yes. What is the difference between straw and hay?
Straw is an end product of a wheat crop, an oat crop, or a, any crop that produces grain of any kind. Hay, that is purely a crop that does not produce the type of thing that wheat or oats will produce. And so it's used for livestock feed for cattle, primarily hogs, not really.
Hey, but, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. And, you know, Hey There was the song Rosie Clooney did years ago. So we sing that at hay time every year.
Question for Orion. What is a nearby contract?
Nearby contract, looking at the board now, at the Board of Trade, the nearby contract is July. And when you take a look at livestock futures, the nearby contract is July for lean hogs, June for live cattle, and August for feeder cattle. It's the first month being traded, which means it's the next month that will terminate and expire and end trading.
So that's the nearby. The nearby is it's upcoming.
Oh, and then the other question I get often there is, what is new crop? Well, new crop contracts for corn would be December because the crop that's growing now will be harvested and delivered to market in September, December. And so we basically look at December as new crop corn and soybeans, November would be new crop. It's the crop that's growing now. And really the price that we give now for new crop is important as the nearby crop because farmers are taking positions in the market to pricing next fall's crop. That's why we call it a futures market.
Let's go to our listener, Andrea.
Orion, 4th of July. Typically, we're in peak summer travel season. Gas prices are at their highest. I heard a story, I believe you did it the other day, saying this 4th of July, gas prices are going to be at probably their lowest level in years. Why is that?
I have given up
a decade ago trying to relate the difference between, or the relationship between crude oil and gasoline.
The reality pricing that doesn't exist.
Yeah, Yeah, I really can't answer that because I don't know. I don't see a relationship between crude oil prices and gasoline anymore. So is it supply-demand for the gasoline market? Which, you know, the demand would be up during holiday driving times, but I don't know.
Years ago, I remember we were talking about corn-based ethanol and the gasoline and how that was so... Was that a fad, or is that now is more gasoline being produced with the corn-based ethanol?
Well, the taxes have changed, right, and the government rules on it?
Yeah, government is not involved in supporting it anymore, but the oil industry, of course, is fighting it. It is a solid industry here in the United States. We not only produce ethanol for cars and other vehicles in this country, we are now exporting ethanol. China is the biggest buyer of U.S. ethanol. And we have proven, I think, over the years that, yes, we can produce enough corn for food for humans, feed for livestock, and energy in the tank.
And the thing is, you throw a nice chicken in there along with your ethanol, and you got yourself a barbecue. All right, so let me see if I can tackle this one, and you tell me if I'm right. Somebody wants to know what 100-weight is. I believe when you're selling cattle, 100-weight is the price per 100 pounds of the cattle. Is that true?
I'll give you an A+.
There you go.
Yes. 100-weight is 100 pounds, but in the cattle trade and in the hog trade, we tend to call it 100-weight rather than 100 pounds. I guess it's a long-standing tradition, but it's 100 pounds.
One of our listeners says, I detasseled corn for a summer job age 14 to 18. Boom, chuck-a-boom. Let's see. Oh, when you're on a hayride, is it hay or straw that you're sitting on?
It could be either one. Generally, it probably will be hay because we're not growing that much in the way of oats, certainly if it's in Illinois. We grow some winter wheat here in Illinois, but Wisconsin, if it was a hay ride, it would be hay.
Listening to Inside Orion, a brand new feature. Texter says, I work for a church. We had a function called the Pork and Corn Roast. Somebody messed up the sign, and it said Pork and Porn Ranchero for 3 weeks until a little old lady pointed it out. The old Pork and Porn at church.
There are so many favorite church signs on Facebook these days. I hadn't seen that one, however.
Somebody wants to know what the VIX mean. That's the volatility index?
That is the volatility index at the Chicago Board Options Exchange. It's, compared to a lot of other contracts, relatively new, I would say 4 or 5 years at least, maybe longer than that. But a combination of factors that people put into play to decide how worried investors are. And so when the volatility index goes up, you know that investors are worried about the market at the moment, and that tends to have an impact on how they are going to trade the market. And last Friday, we saw the volatility index, VIX, I think it went up about 40 or 49% because of the Brexit thing. But you know my rule on marketing that I've learned over the 55, 60 years I've been covering it, rule that never fails. Prices never go the same way forever. There is always a correction, and we're beginning to see that this morning.
Last question from listener Jeff, who is calling. Jeff, I'll try to ask a question for you here. What status of our trade with Vietnam? Up, down, continuing? Where are we with that?
Trade with Vietnam is continuing to grow, and we do get coffee from Vietnam, but they are building their livestock trade. I was last there in 1999, and at that point, the way that they were raising pigs was in the backyard, because pork is an important food item in Vietnam, but it was 5 or 6 in the backyard. Now they're buying U.S. corn, they're buying U.S. soybeans to feed a growing livestock crop. As we continue to watch China and Southeast Asia increase its consumption of meat, although last week, the Chinese government decreed that they would cut their meat consumption by 50% in that country. I don't know if you're going to convince 1,300,000,000 people to do that or not.
Yeah, I don't get how you do that. I mean, there's a lot of things that Chinese government polices, but hey, get that steak out of your mouth. I don't know how that works.
I don't either.
922. Thank you. Orion Samuelson, available for birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. And I do all of his bookings. Say hi to Gloria.
I'll say hi to Gloria, and I do tell Oli Lena stories at all my bookings.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. The kids love it. That's a big O. All right. This is how out of touch I am with the Chicago restaurant scene. I love Table 52.
Yeah.
And the last time I was at Table 52, that's Art Smith's place, Oprah's personal chef. Last time I was at Table 52 was with my mom and sisters.
Did you get shrimp and
on
grits?
Fried chicken night.
Oh, yeah.
Art Smith's fried chicken could solve all the problems in the world. If you dropped fried chicken on the most tumultuous areas of the world made by Art Smith, there'd be no wars. Mm-hmm. There'd just be happy people.
And a side
Plus,
of death.
He makes these biscuits.
Yeah.
These biscuits that are ridiculous. So guess what? Table 52 is closed. They
what?
Closed at New Year's Eve. I didn't even know this.
I didn't either.
How'd I miss that memo? The good news is Art Smith is opening up a new restaurant, Blue Door Kitchen and Garden. It opens this Friday at 10 a.m. for lunch. It replaces Table 52. And I don't know how similar the menu is going to be, but I just want to say something to Art. I don't know Art well. I've only met him a couple times. If he's not doing the fried chicken and the biscuits, he's going to have a problem with me. That's all I'm saying. All right, Art, you've been warned. But good luck. Like you need it. You're Art Smith. With Blue Door Kitchen and Garden, it opens where Table 52 was. This weekend. It's 9:29. Big story next on 720 WGN.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
9:41. Steve Dale's here. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning. By the way, can I say one thing? I am so lucky to have this opportunity, not only to be at this radio station, but to be at a place and on a show. We adopted the last dog out from last month. That was kind of an easy win, though. It was a puppy, so we're kind of cheating there. But
the puppy with a tiny head, right?
Yes.
Little head?
Yes. Unlike
kind of the funky-looking little guy?
Unlike the broadcaster who's talking to you now.
No, the giant melon that's speaking now is totally different. Never confused
and
for the
Ripley,
other.
Ripley, the dog that we made the video of, too, he and all his brothers got adopted. Remember the little
Is that
cat?
True?
Yeah. We've
oh,
done,
that's great
we've
news.
Done,
yeah.
We've done
Excellent.
Really, really well.
Thank
so,
you, audience.
Well, yes, and thank you, Steve.
Absolutely. And Steve Dale's here and on the radio on Sunday. What time?
6:30.
And what are you talking about this week?
I am talking about something that's super secret.
All right, good.
Good. How about that for a tease? Yeah.
You have to listen Sunday morning. I have no idea what Steve's going to talk about. Before we get to Jimmy, this fabulous dog, little guy that's here today, who has no interest in me, but he will. He'll warm up.
He has a great deal of interest in the ladies.
He's
in the corner
working the ladies.
Yes,
that's
is.
Exactly right, Jimmy. But this is a big weekend with fireworks.
Yeah.
It's already started.
Yep.
Dogs, almost all of them, hate the big noises, the booms. What's out there? What do you like? What do you not like? For instance, the thunder shirt, is that a good option?
Absolutely can be. So if the dog is inconsolable, I mean, the dog probably thinks, actually, I'm going to die. I mean, some of them really likely think that. Then the best thing you can do is today, while there's still a bit of time between now and July 4th, right, call your veterinarian for an appropriate anti-anxiety medication. Back in the old days, they'd say Benadryl. Now you've got a sleepy dog that's also terrified. That is not the answer. Mm-hmm. You need something for these dogs that are inconsolable, something that appropriately plays with their brain chemistry.
Yeah, and it's got and ask your vet.
Yes.
It's not a Tylenol PM.
No.
You know, it's you know, I mean, don't be dumb.
No. So yeah. The most humane thing can do would be that. Now, for dogs that are anxious, they're worried, they're clearly not happy about those fireworks, there are some things you can do and some products out there. You mentioned the Thunder Shirt. That's a great one. There's a product called Adaptil. That's a copy of a pheromone that helps to tone down anxiety. It's the same pheromone when mothers give milk to puppies. Helps calm the puppies. This does the same sort of thing. There's okay. a new one called Celio that's only available through veterinarians. And that one you rub on the gums, and it's approved by the FDA and all that. And it's a brand new product. Again, it lowers anxiety and stress. Other thing you can simply do is take your dog down to the basement, close the blinds, pump up the classical music, which is actually now studies have been shown that it can help calm dogs and distract the dog.
Dogs like the classics.
clearly, you know, it's all about Mozart. Or better, a talk radio station, a certain radio station,
sure.
Turn that on.
Yeah.
And maybe certain programs in particular. And also with that distraction. So stuff some treats inside toys. Play games with the dog if you're there. For a lot of dogs that are just upset about it, that will do the trick.
I had a dog a few years ago, and it was sad because he was trying to write a letter to his congressman, and it was before computers, and, you know, seeing him try to hold the pen in his paw wasn't easy. Wasn't easy.
Today they'd email.
Joining us in studio is Jenny Schluter. Jenny's from Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
Well, nice to see you and hear about your work, which is on a day-to-day basis. What do you guys do?
Well, Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control helps with the tremendous amount of animals that find themselves at the city's pound, usually about 20,000 a year.
Good and Lord, is that right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize how many unfortunate animals.
I certainly
animals.
Didn't.
Right. But the numbers are going down. We're excited about that.
Sure.
We're on the right trend, but, you know, still.
That's still 60 a day.
Yeah.
That's
lots
amazing.
Well, what's really amazing, he could do the math that fast. I could not.
Not just another pretty face.
That's pretty good at this
thanks.
Time in the morning.
Thanks.
But yeah, they have a lot of needs. And so the idea of Friends is to help the city to kind of fill in the gap for things, you know, medical equipment they might not have the budget for to treat those animals, because we want them to have a good quality of life while they're
sure.
there and then get them out of there as soon as possible.
How'd you guys get Jimmy?
Jimmy, you know, it's kind of a mystery how he ended up there, but we know that he's about 1 year old, and he's a great little guy, just a tad bit shy, but already warmed up. It took about 5 minutes for him
sure.
to warm up here.
Terrier mix?
Terrier mix, my favorite, Scruffy.
Scruffy doggy.
Like cutie.
You can see this dog at WGNradio.com.
You can see Dave on the floor. Now, this
is on the floor.
Two times
yes.
you'll see Dave on the floor.
We're bonding.
As if there's a dog in the room or it's Saturday morning. Right?
Exactly.
Or Sunday morning. So this terrier mix, 1 year old.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we think? Life or crime, maybe? And snuck in for a safe house?
We don't know that it's an owner give up or exactly what happened. But we should describe. So this dog is a multicolored dog. Mm-hmm. So it's your typical scruffy terrier dog.
And fully grown at what, 15, 20 pounds?
About 16 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
you're right in there.
Build, a good build. He's not too skinny, not too fat. Nice
yeah,
shape.
A good shape.
Yeah, he's gonna get not much larger. So
yeah.
It's a variety of different colors. Describe those colors. And you also mentioned a mustache. So this dog should be called Joel Quenneville.
Oh, he's got a Coach
yeah.
Q mustache?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, yeah.
In the back, he looks kind of like a cow dog, right?
What?
With black patches.
Yeah. In coloring.
Color,
in coloring, yeah.
Got
don't
some insult
nice brown
you.
Spots in the front
yeah.
and a really cute mustache and kind of some cute whiskers and a possibility of doing a mohawk hairstyle for sure, which
sure,
I know
totally.
A lot of hipsters in Wicker Park like dogs with mohawks.
Yeah,
of course.
Dave, you rolled around on the floor with Jimmy. What's your thought?
He's a great dog. What personality. He wants to play, too.
Yeah? Affectionate?
Very affectionate.
No, I was asking Jimmy if you were affectionate.
This dog is so cute. You said he was a little shy, so in that case, do you try and integrate him, you know, to the dog parks and things, or do you wait? What do you do with the dog?
You just do it gradually and let Jimmy make the call. So when I met Jimmy on the street outside, I ignored the dog, and therefore the dog Jimmy comes right up to me.
You're going, hey, look at me.
So on the scale of shyness, so when I first got the report on this dog, I'm being full disclosure here, I was kind of worried because the email said very, all caps, shy. So now I meet the dog, and I love shy dogs. I love working with them. And a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most shy, this dog's like a 3.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
No,
so it just
quick.
Takes a couple
right.
minutes. It's no
right.
big deal.
Yeah, and if you're a little Jimmy and you see big people coming at you, you see Dave rolling around on the floor, you know, it's going to take a second.
Yeah, I'd be shy, too.
I'd say Jimmy's smart. Not just shy, he's smart.
Yes.
And so, Dave, this could be the one.
Well, I have one.
Ozzy needs a friend.
Could be the two.
No, I think this dog definitely deserves a good home.
And this dog we also know
and
is
Dave,
good.
You have a very good home.
This dog
well,
is so cute.
Dave lives in the wilderness. This is perfect.
The wilderness? You live in the north suburbs.
That's well, there's coyotes.
Dave lives on a cul-de-sac that doesn't call de or sack. Just,
no.
So it's no, one way to away.
What a friendly dog, though.
Yep.
Really.
Yeah.
So you'd recommend this dog highly?
I give him 5 stars.
Andrea? Could be time.
5 paws.
Puppy in the Darla's house.
I know. I love this dog. It's my kind of dog, too, with a little terrier with the scruffy
this
look.
This is a good idea. We should do this with every dog. The Enet Darla's rating.
Ooh,
yes.
That's right. I give 5 paws.
And guilt him up. And by the way, the good thing is, too, with this dog, you're walking around with a baggie reversed on your hand. This is like rabbit pellets here. This dog's not going to be a problem at all.
And we know for, statistically, a lot of people that adopt dogs have a cat. And this dog is living with the foster family now. And Corrine, who's a hero for fostering this dog, really, for all the foster people. Because they save lives, because now this opens up a space in the shelter, much better to be, the Chicago shelter's fine, but much better to be in a home always, and it's foster families like Corrine that do save lives, living now with several cats.
That dog's, dog's got a great face.
Mohawk, too.
Yeah,
and what like a great smile. Job Corrine did to see how shy he was and to see how he's come out of his shell so beautifully.
Totally. So how can people get this dog, Jenny? They can go to the animal shelter.
Come to the studio immediately and be vetted right here.
They can contact Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control's website, fcacc.org, and find out how to adopt. And you'll be linked with the foster parent and be sent an application.
That's it.
And set up for a home visit to check him out.
fcacc.org.
Mm-hmm. A big event coming up.
Yours?
Friends of Animal Care and Control.
Which is?
And I'll be out there, actually. So this is you've seen the food trucks around town.
Yeah, of course.
Well, it's about time we have one for dogs. So this is going to be a food truck for dogs.
Oh, let's be clear on this. This is for dogs to eat the food from the truck.
Yes.
Yes. We have a food truck. It's not time for one for dogs. That's a whole different movie, and we don't star in that movie.
That's a great idea, though.
Yeah.
So this is July 12th at 4 o'clock to 7
o'clock.
A dog
food truck.
That'll be parked at, this is my kind of benefit, this is at Dog Beach.
Oh, really?
And the benefit is for Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. I'll be out there offering training tips. Vitabone will offer dog treats and Vitabone trainers, which are these really little treats that are wonderful. Adoptable dogs from Friends of Animal Care and Control will be out there. Lots of canine swag and free dog food samples, as I mentioned. For information, goodstuffpettruck.com, goodstuffpettruck.com. Again, that's July 12th from 4 to 7 o'clock. Another thing I love about this benefit, it's free.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, you could donate, and we'd certainly love for you to donate, you know, $2, $200, $2 million, whatever it is. Sure.
And blankets and tennis balls and toys and treats.
Yeah, you could bring those for Friends of Animal Care and Control, and they'll have dogs just like Jimmy out there, but I suspect that by July 12th, Jimmy will be adopted out.
By 10 o'clock, Jimmy will be adopted.
I hope.
And one more opportunity for adopting is Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control will be out at the Riverwalk every Saturday from July 2nd through August 20th with adoptable dogs and cats and kittens.
Right here, the Riverwalk?
Right between State and Wabash on the Riverwalk. That's so right come here. Down 12 right to 3 every Saturday and visit some more dogs like Jimmy.
And you can come by and you can hold your doggy up in the window.
Yeah.
So fcacc.org for information on all those, right?
Right.
All right. Nice to see you. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much.
Sunday morning, 6:30.
Yes, sir.
Steve Dale. And Steve Dale's website is?
And by the way, lots and lots more tips about fireworks there. SteveDale.tv.
SteveDale.tv. We're back with Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.